This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Wednesday today. I was going to say it's Thursday today, but it is not Thursday. I decided it was probably a good idea if I did this a little early, because my wife's brother is retiring from the Army tomorrow, so we're going to take a real quick little, Friday is the ceremony for retiring, so we're going to take a real quick little trip, and we're going to go see him, and that's, we're going to be traveling tomorrow, and I thought, you know what, it's going to be a little difficult to maybe get this done tomorrow, so we'll just do it today, and it is, it's like episode 495, I think. Not going to be too many more before we're at 500. Quarter of the way, because we're going to 2,000. And that's just because my son-in-law promised me that he would listen to all of them after I die. So when I get to 500, I can announce, oh, beloved son-in-law of mine, you are one quarter of the way. So anyways, it's been a good week. We are taking a little time off here coming up. And so, you know, that's kind of been hovering in the background. We got one more day before we take a little bit of time off. So that's fun. But been able to get a lot of good things done this week. I am in the middle of trying to put together some calculations for something called a service increment. And it's just fascinating because just about the time I think I understand the rules, there are more rules that come up. But I think I'm getting close now. Tomorrow, hopefully before end of day, I will have the final calculations as far as the money involved of the service increments, and I can compare that against what is now in a spreadsheet as the canonical source for everything that is supposedly correct. And then once I have that, then we can start hashing through it and, you know, figuring out where the calculations are not correct or where there has been just a dispensation of grace. Because you have calculations to get to this dollar amount, but then there has also been a dispensation of grace at times where the executives have said, and we'll give them this, and it's not according to any rules, and so you just have to end up with a canonical source where you just list the years and say, yes, they got a value for that year, yes, they got a value for this year, yes, they got a value, you know, and just go from there. And if I can get this canonical list up and we can synchronize it and we can deal with the exceptions, then when it comes to the end of 2018 where these service increments are going forward, then theoretically we can go ahead and calculate it, see what there is, and then if that's good, then, you know, we can go from there. So, step at a time. It's really interesting. So that's good. The book has been a little bit of a challenge this week. I did get the cover done. Did it fast. It was fast like a racehorse. Fast. I think last Thursday, I just had a little bit of editing left to do. I did get that done on Thursday. And then Friday, I started the cover. I kind of had a concept of what I wanted to do for the cover. And Friday, as I was going around, it was visual pun day on Friday. That was fun. Found a really great t-shirt and some socks. It was fun. It just was fun. But I grabbed some bread from Walmart, just kind of standard bread. And then I ran by the Artisan Oven, which is a little specialty shop that's down on Commerce. and bought some bread from that. Man, that is good bread. That is really good bread. I had too much of that bread this week. And I got to the place where I could feel it. When I eat too many carbs, I get to the place where I can feel it. And so, yeah, I was feeling that. And then I just decided, okay, we're done. And so I kind of backed away from that for a couple of days. And, you know, now I'm kind of feeling back to normal again. Anyway, so got all the bread together. And I had got a fair bit of the cover kind of roughed in to where I knew what I wanted to do. And got enough of it done that Saturday night I ran down and got the grandkids and their outfits, and that all worked out fine. We took some pictures and I made some adjustments and we made it work, and it was fine. We have achieved the level of passable mediocrity. That is what we're going for, and we've got it. So that was fine. I did miscalculate a little bit because I saw that sundown was at 7:20, so I was like, okay, great. So I got down there, I don't know, 7:40-ish, 7:30, 6:30, 6:40-ish, and Lizzie had already started dressing Clara in her dress, and I'm thinking, great, I've got 50 minutes, we can make this happen. Well, by the time we got out there and started shooting pictures at 7:40, we already had hard shadows, and we were right on the edge of that golden hour, it's called, or golden light phase. Except we have a bunch of trees around us, and so the sun actually dips behind those trees about a half hour before sunset. So the light was gone at 10 till 7. So I had about 10 minutes where we could take some pictures. And we first took some pictures of Asher and then took some pictures of Clara. Well, by the time we got to Clara's pictures, the light was gone. But she was standing in the background for some of Asher's pictures. And she was kind of just staring at Asher. And I kind of wanted her looking a little bit disgusted at Asher anyways for the cover. So that worked out, except she was wearing her glasses. So then I had to take off the glasses. And she ended up looking Asian, but that's okay. She's in the distance. You can't really tell. So that was fine. So then by Sunday, I had all the files, got all the files put together. I was ready to go. This has been in the past the easy part, because then I just upload the files. You wait a day, they get approved. I order the beta copies, good to go, moving on. Because I've done this lots of times now. I mean, I have had like 20 books on CreateSpace. So I sign on to CreateSpace, and this is when they want to move me to kdp.amazon.org, because Amazon.com owns KDP, and then they eventually opened up on kdp.amazon.com, Kindle Direct Publishing. They opened up doing paperback books on that, and now they just want to move everybody. So, okay, fine. So I did some research, and it was like, yeah, dude, okay, fine. So I say, yeah, let them move me. Poof, that happens Sunday. I go through the setup process for the first book that I'm doing, first paperback book that I'm doing on KDP, and it all goes fine. It just goes fine. You know, upload all the stuff, and then they're just like, that's fine, we're going to review your files, it's going to be great, take a look in the digital previewer. I look at the digital previewer, everything looks like it's supposed to look. You know, it's like, hey, all the margins are correct, they check everything, they don't find any problems, we're good. I'm thinking, psh, this is, we're moving forward. So then I get this cryptic email like Monday morning sometime, and it says, well, your interior file and your cover file, the title, subtitle, series information doesn't match the information that you entered for your book details. What? So, never got this error message from CreateSpace before, so I do some research when I get home, and they're saying, yeah, you can't put like these types of words in there, and you have to make sure that your author names match precisely with what's on the cover, because we don't want to confuse readers. That's their justification. Don't want to confuse readers. I'm like, oh, okay. So I'm looking at it, trying to figure out what's different. Finally, I, you know, just make some decisions. I change the internal files. I upload all the files again. Another 24 hours goes by. Same error message goes back. By this time, I'm like, what? I gotta order some beta copies here. So, you know, I get in touch with them last night, Tuesday. Call them up and start talking to the lady and telling her, you know, I don't know what's wrong here. I don't, can you, well, that's a special team that handles that, but I'll have them call you. Okay, great, you know. And I'm thinking, yeah, they have just bulk moved. How many thousands of authors? I can imagine they are getting inundated at this point with support calls. Because the error message that you get is generic. It doesn't tell you what you're supposed to do. It just says, yeah, in the old days, fix and rerun. That's in the old COBOL days, you wouldn't get any kind of an error on some things. It would just say, fix and rerun. So it's one of those fix and rerun errors, and I'm thinking they are just getting hammered. So I do realize that you can order proof copies before it's live for sale, so that's fine. But you can only order five of a time. So I order a bunch of them, and then I can still only get five, because what you have to do is you have to order five and then wait for them to put it up on Amazon.com and then pay for it. And then go back and order another five and wait. And there's, you know, anywhere from 10 minutes to 2 hours for them to actually get this set up. So I just ended up ordering. I did that seven times and ended up ordering about 35 books. I have no idea if I even need that many this time, because, you know, it's getting a little harder to get beta readers in when you tell them, yeah, this is the ninth book in the series. There have been 1.2 million words before this book, and there's been like 3,400 pages. People go, what? You know, so it's fine. It's fine. So at least I got that ordered. I finally heard back from them today via email, and they're like, oh, we understand you're having a problem with formatting. I wrote them back. I said, no, I'm not actually having a problem with formatting. I described what the problem was. I hadn't heard back from them yet. Well, I'm sure it'll all work out. At this point, I've got myself some breathing room. Anyways, today, I'm getting close to being home already. Today, I had notes, but, yeah. I've been, this past week, I've been listening to the subsequent two discussions between Jordan Peterson and Sam Harris. I mentioned a couple of weeks ago that I had listened to their discussions in Vancouver. These two discussions were respectively in Dublin and London. And they included another guy, Douglas Murray, I think was his name. And they're very interesting. And it's really interesting. And a lot of it was just like I talked about last time, that you got these two or three very intelligent guys, and they're sitting around in what I would deem a vacuum, because they're not talking about, in fact, they deny a personal relationship with the God of the universe. And so, and they speak disparagingly of that, as if anyone who believes in that is nuts, of course. And you listen to them go around and around and try to find some foundation for value and meaning, and you hear Sam Harris in particular make these blatant generalizations about religion and blah, 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 blah. And obviously he's got to burr in his saddle when it comes to religion of any kind of metaphysical, you know. I mean, he just thinks that's death. So, you know, you listen to all that kind of stuff, and it was a lot more of that, of the same, but there's some interesting stuff in it. One thing is that Douglas Murray apparently is kind of in the middle between Jordan Peterson with his appreciation of religious thought and the archetypal language and this, what the stories can tell us about life. And Jordan Peterson, who's very much of a rationalist, he thinks stories are good, but you should never base anything on them. You should just, if they make you feel good, that's fine, but blah, blah. So, you know, first of all, in a way, Sam Harris set up a situation where he was outnumbered, because in his mind, there is just no purpose whatsoever for any kind of religious thought. I mean, just none. He doesn't have it. He's just, we should just throw everything out. Whereas Jordan Peterson, of course, is very archetypal and story related, and Douglas Murray sees value there. So, I mean, because Sam Harris has drawn such a hard line in terms of religious thought, he really, in setting this thing up and in agreeing to it, really kind of outnumbered himself, which, you know, you got to appreciate the fact that he's willing to put himself on the line like that. And it was interesting. The discussions are very interesting. One of the funny phrases that they mentioned in that is Jesus smuggling. And Jesus smuggling was a term that Eric Weinstein came up with as an expression of frustration. That when you're talking to people of faith and you're trying to get to the bottom of something, and you get to the place where there's no good answer to the bottom of it, no way to explain it, then they go, and there's Jesus. And all of a sudden, the only answer is Jesus. And that's just so frustrating to them. And so that was funny to hear them talking about them talking about that, because they're really struggling with this. How do you find meaning? How do you find value? Where do you locate it? Blah, 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 blah. And the problem that that Sam Harris has with Jordan Peterson is that it's just too easy. That you give people too much of an excuse to smuggle Jesus in when you start talking about story and the value of story. That he doesn't like that. He doesn't. It's so funny to listen to all this. But one of the things that came, I was thinking about as I was listening to this, there were a couple of things that were interesting that Sam Harris said. One of them was that he came out and admitted that he has, in some of his experiences with like mushrooms, he said, you know, honestly, he said, if I had a religious background and I had those experiences, I would be much more inclined to interpret those experiences within a religious context because of the transcendence that he felt and this otherness that he felt and that he acknowledges was very real to him, that he believes was a valid experience. Well, already you're into spirituality when you do that, but he don't like to admit that. And so that's interesting because, you know, he makes this claim that all religious thought is just irrational, that they're just make-believe stories, that, you know, he said, well, like, who here actually believes in a personal God who hears our prayers and, you know, but that's all they have. They have that one way that you're just sitting here in a vacuum and you're throwing these prayers out there and nothing is happening. And he at least then admitted that there could be experiences that you had back the other way that would very easily be interpreted in a quote unquote religious context. And honestly, I've shared some of the stories before of my life and those things. And to me, in my little way of thinking, none of this is irrational because I have had experiences, some of which, very few, I'll grant you, some of which are really hard to explain any other way than I'm in communication with something that knows the future and has prepared me in certain ways for the future. And so, you know, once you get to that point where you've had some of those experiences and you look at them, you go, yeah, okay, there's no way I could have controlled this. I don't have these pieces. I can't be in control of this stuff. And it goes bam, 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 and lines up just in extraordinary ways. And when that happens, multiple times. Well, it's not irrational at all, and I was happy to hear Sam Harris said that some of his experiences would easily fit within a religious context. It's not irrational at all to say, well, look, this is what happened. Does that not smack of a communication from the transcendent? But the other thing that I got really tickled about is Sam Harris was trying to make the case. He was just determined that, and it's so funny when he talks, it's like, okay, any of you who thinks that atheism caused the atrocities in the 20th century, like Hitler and like Stalin's atrocities, any of you who think that, you just need to put that out of your mind because you need to listen to the next few sentences. And we need to set that to rest forever because it wasn't atheism that caused that. Now, what was interesting is Douglas Murray didn't let him get away with that. And Douglas Murray said, whoa, whoa, wait, wait. He said, because Sam Harris was saying, because when you really look at the dogma and the intolerance and the irrationality of what happened in Stalin's Russia and in Hitler's Germany, what you find is all the characteristics that look just like religion. And so that's really what caused it. Okay, what? Whoa, what? What? And I don't know why anybody isn't making this point. But in essence, Sam Harris is saying, well, it's dogma, it's irrationality. It is this ascribing to individuals some transcendence that they should be worshipped beyond just being normal human beings, that they should be rigidly obeyed. That's where the problem is. And he also acknowledges that that can exist apart from an actual classical religious thought. So already he's isolating down the problem and saying, yes, this can exist apart from some kind of classic religious thought. And yet that's his attack on religion, where if you look at that, you go, okay, so in other words, it's not really religion because those elements can manifest in religion, but then they also manifested in Hitler's Germany and in Stalin's. And so the problem is the dogma. The problem is the irrationality. The problem is the blind loyalty. The problem, and what is the root of that? And I would maintain, obviously, that the root of that is flesh. That's flesh. That's destruction. It's what Jordan Peterson calls the malevolence, or even what atheists I've heard called, you know, the demons versus our better angels. So we all recognize this. And for me, that's why it becomes disingenuous for Sam Harris than to attack religion on those bases when he freely acknowledges that these elements can exist outside of religion. And I'm sure he would say, well, but religion just exacerbates it. Okay, well, you know, my response to that is, well, if we're going to ban religion because it exacerbates dogma and irrationality and the hero worship of people and blind loyalty, then we really need to ban sports as well. Because all those elements are in sports as well. And I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago or last week sometime. You know, you talk about dogmatic. People get so dogmatic about their teams. It's ridiculous. And you look at all the harm that sports has caused. You look at all the hooligans and the rioting that the soccer causes. And then you look at the actual participants, these men and women whose bodies are destroyed by participating in these things. And then you look at all the non-participants and how many guys are sitting on couches stuffing their face with food when they should be exercising, when they could be far more productive, when they could be far more creative than just sitting there and pretending that their loyalty to a team somehow makes the difference. And they've got to wear their special jersey when their team plays because they're helping their team win. You talk about irrationality and dogma and worship of people. And people almost coming to fisticuffs when they're, I mean, and the unkindness of it all. you know, and Jordan Peterson or Sam Harris has gone so far as to identify that, yeah, there are things in sports like that, sure. You know, but and yet he still. But religion's worse than them all. Okay, buddy. Okay. All right, that's fine. Now, I mean, I have been quite vocal about my beliefs about organized religion, and I think it's extremely easy for organized religion to fall into very bad practices because it's constantly trying to justify its own existence, because it's constantly trying to make sure that it continues to exist. I mean, when you read about, you know, these sex scandals within the Catholic Church, this is just sad. But by the same token, I know where that comes from. That's flesh. It's flesh. So it's just, it's really been interesting just to listen to this and just watch people sputtering and trying to figure it out. But at the same time, it's been amazing. And Sam Harris and Jordan Peterson and Douglas Murray all agree that it's amazing. That you can just put three guys up on the stage and you sell out auditoriums. You sell out sports venues. Because people are interested. They're trying to find meaning. They're trying to understand life. And the final thing that was just fascinating to me is Douglas Murray moved the topic. They got on the subject of love right towards the end, and he facetiously said, well, I'd hate to end on something so upbeat, so let's do this. Why don't you tell us what you hate most about this existence? That was an interesting question, because Jordan Peterson said what he hated most about this was the fact that he knew there was a part of him that would be very content to serve as a prison guard at Auschwitz. You know, not only okay with it, but happy to serve as a prison guard. And Sam Harris very much agreed with that statement. And then Sam Harris also followed it up with, you know, that one of the things that he hated was that life could be so mundane and so filled in his mind with thoughts that were just so mediocre and so much better than he could be, and that people go through their lives just slogging through when they, you know, have such gifts and have such opportunities. And both of them, what both of them were talking about was the battle with the flesh. That's what both of them, they're both in this struggle with the flesh, and they're looking, trying to find some escape, trying to find something that will buttress their better angels, to use a phrase that I heard an atheist use, trying to find something that will buttress their better angels to help them in their battle with the flesh. And, you know, I was just thinking when they got down to all the, you know, down the bottom of that and saying those are the things that can help, that of course, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to Jesus smuggle this. I'm just going to say, well, yeah, you know what your problem is? You need Jesus. That's what you need. And Jesus and the power of the Spirit, that can help you with that. Get you to the place where you don't hate that so much, because you have a much better chance of being on top of that and in front of it. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.